Good morning, BSPs. How you doing? I haven't checked ticket sales on the show July 30th, but I'm sure we're moving along swimmingly. As I mentioned to you, as of the weekend, we were like halfway to a sellout. I have to be honest with you, it disturbed me a little bit when they said that we sold out in 3 days. I think that was bullshit. The first show, we didn't sell out in 3 days, man, because I remember we announced and we were pitching it for at least a week. Now, this is going to go, I suspect, slower because we've given so much lead time to people buying tickets, which I think is a very good thing. Gives you a lot of opportunity to, and we can talk about some of the things we're going to do. I am, as usual, this is unusual for me that I feel as, I've never gone into any kind of a performance situation in my life feeling, you know, like not being new to it. I mean, I've felt going into performance situations that I've been excited about these things, right? But I've never gone into a performance situation where what the hell was that? Was it my glasses? Where I have felt really excited about it, and I don't have that much experience at it. I don't have a lot of experience in live performing. You know, I've got experience with doing personal appearances, but going on stage and doing an extended piece where there's, you know, middle, beginning, and end, and all that shit, beginning, middle, and end. We start with the middle, and then we go to the beginning. But I'm so thrilled with this, you know, phase of what we do, which is basically just be weird for a living, and I just really am. So That only bodes well for you guys. If the guy's having fun on stage, you know that you're going to get a good show. And I'm even to the point now where, as I said to you, okay, we're going to do 90 minutes because I know I got 90 minutes in me. I may have 2 hours in me. I don't know. I got a million ideas, and how am I going to cram them all in? I think I'm going to have to make the segment shorter, and, you know, all kinds of shit's flying through my head. And then the other thing I was thinking of is, you know, costume. We did the first thing. I just wanted to get the character straight. The other thing that I noticed, I looked at the videotape, the blocking's kind of fucked up, meaning I got to make sure I remember where these goddamn characters belong. I mean, it's a pretty automatic thing when you're in character. Oh, he should be at this part of the stage. But I should do it a little bit, I think, more crisply. Although, you know, I was talking to Horatio after the show, and Horatio Sants helped basically direct this thing. He helped, when we were rehearsing over at UCB, helped me, you know, sort of put it together, and he said it looked fine. But I think what I want to do is maybe get that a little bit more nailed down. And then the other thing is this idea of wardrobe or costume. You know, nothing wrong with putting on a pair of sunglasses or a hat, but you know what? Sometimes it gets too fucking busy. You got too much shit. You gotta let me put on a hat. Okay, now do you see the character? I believe that I'll just come out wearing something basic, you know, and I'll come out in all black. Okay, so then I'm just a body moving in space. No, I'll come out with nude. You know, I went to a show, by the way, when I was married. Maria and I, she saw this thing. This was, and I say this endearingly to Maria. This is a very cute thing about her. She would say, I read a review of this gal's show in the paper today. Oh, we have to go see it. I said, great. She's a performance artist. Uh-huh. And she's out in West Hollywood. She's at a theater in West Hollywood. Let's go. I got us tickets. I said, yeah, fantastic. Most of the time when we went to a show or something, Maria found it was great. She got tickets for Eric Bogosian. She knew that I'd wanted to see Eric Bogosian for forever. And he came out to L.A., came out to UCLA, and I was like, fuck, you know, I went and saw him. It was absolutely brilliant. And I remember getting home from that show when we went online and we found his website and we commented. We said, we just got back from your show at UCLA. It was fucking phenomenal. And he actually emailed us back and he said, your comment was the first thing that I saw when I got off the plane in New York. Thank you very much for, you know, and I can imagine how he felt. He must have lifted him up a lot if he had any doubts about how good he was. But I don't know, because he says, yours was the very first comment I saw, and I really, you know, because that, man, that means a lot to people. Any of us, whatever we do. Somebody comes up and says, boy, that was a great fucking job you did. God, you know, that's worth, they did a study once, And as I remember it, it was 20, 30 years old now, but the study essentially said, in lieu of a raise, in lieu of more money, people really love the odd comment. The study even went on to say, it's possible that people would even take comments in lieu of money, which I have a hard time believing. You know, you could get away with just telling a guy how fucking great he is, you know, and not give him a raise. And that makes you think, doesn't it? Because it makes me think. I think back on my work experience, the number of times people kissed my ass, and then I'd say, well, how about some more money? Well, we got to, you know, the thing. And you sort of put two and two together. If I'm that good, how come I don't? And you suddenly realize, well, the reason, well, the guy's saying that to me because he's saving himself some money. Maybe. That's very cynical of me, but. What am I talking about? Look at my hand. God, it was. I think that's just from the sleep situation. I had another rough night of sleep last night. Last two nights, and I'm putting it together now. I think it's got something to do with the last weekend. I fucking amped on the sugar. No. I'm not giving my body a chance to detox a lot of that shit out, man. So that's why we're back into the groove, you know. I did 1,800 calories yesterday. I did 1,000 calories a day before. Today, I think I'll be able to get away with fewer calories. And probably maybe I'll, if I can hold it around 1,200, that'll be great. But, you know, I remember, you guys know that when I started this diet back in the spring of 2012, so it's been 2 years since I lost all that fucking weight, I was at 2,000 calories a day. And that was my, you know, now I realize that I can go even lower if I need to, you know, and that's just the discipline of it, you know. And the other thing is, you go into a store, if you get yourself used to eating right, it's hard to go back. It really is. People have often said to me, oh, I'll give yourself a break, Phil, one day a week. But I'll go into the store and I'm like, well, what would I really like? You know, oh, wow, look, donuts. Oh, wow, look, chocolate, which is my big fucking weakness, man. I could buy all that shit. And I'm not even a really chocolate aficionado. I don't know goddamn chocolate. I mean, Snickers is the height of the fucking world for me. Hershey bars, man, Snickers bars, fucking Milky Ways, goddamn Three Musketeers. To me, that's fucking living, you know. I'm a guy that I even like coconut and chocolate. I mean, I'm so fucked up with that shit. I know people that won't go near a Mounds bar, and I love them. And when I was a kid, my favorite thing to eat in the movie theater was an Almond Joy or a Mounds. Man, I got that shit. Everybody bought that Raisinette shit. I didn't care about that. Milk Duds, which, you know, would rip your teeth right out. Milk Duds are fantastic. And parents, you know, I can't even imagine how it was that I didn't get my first cavity till I was 16 or 17, and there were already kids going in to get their teeth pulled and putting in dentures at 5, you know. And I was chewing those goddamn Milk Duds. And then the other one that I liked was a Mounds bar and the Almond Joy, which was basically a Mounds bar with an almond in it. One almond. Whoever had that idea, it's a brilliant candy bar, and I loved them. Loved them. I could buy them by the fucking crate, honest to Christ. And they're probably, it's probably the most high-sugar, cheap-shit fucking candy that I think it's Peter Paul, is that it? These companies, you got Hershey's, you got Mars, then you have Peter Paul, and you have a few of these lesser gods of lesser children or children of lesser gods, whatever. What else did we eat, man? I love the... And then back in the day, we had sugar daddies and we had sugar babies. Fucking sugar daddy, I love that shit, man. Once again, it was one of those... I eat one of those things now, every tooth in my head will fly out, you know. But we would chew on those goddamn things, man, just... all day long, you're getting the caramel out of your teeth, and you just loved it. You know, you're in heaven. And those sugar babies came in a bag. They were little caramel, chewy, and those were made by, who made the goddamn sugar daddy? It was, shit. That's a whole other company. I'm going to find this shit out, man.
I'll tell you right now, I ain't going to fuck around with this. I'm going to find out right now, you know.
Sugar daddies were made by who? There we go. Find your sugar daddy. Oh, now see, I want to find the candy bar, man. There it is. There's the candy bar. Images for sugar daddy. because my eyes are so fucking, I got my glasses on, man. Well, you guys are probably seeing that better than me, but let me go back to, Sugar Daddy, what I want, Sugar Daddy, the Sugar Daddy website. God, can you imagine that? For all of you, Sugar, there you go. It's a fucking, it's a goddamn escort service. That's great. I'm talking about the candy bar here. Sugar Daddy sucker. It was more like a sucker or a fucking, I don't know what you call it. Candy you ate as a kid. Do they not make these anymore? Robert Welch. Welch's, that's it. It was not Welch's grape juice. It was fucking 1925, man, this motherfucker. It was originally called the Papa Sucker, and somebody went, wait a minute, you know. Various slogans were tried. Of all the Pop family, this is Papa, and from that they got Sugar Daddy. Welch is the company. Now, let me make sure that I got that right. You know, look at me. Look at me wasting fucking time on this. Sugar Daddy candy. Oh, excuse me. I got to move this fucker. Candy bar, stick back, Tootsie Roll. It's manufactured by Tootsie Roll Industries. But it was originally James O. Welch Company was purchased by the National Biscuit Company, Nabisco, in 1963. And that's about when we started eating them. In the early 60s, you go to the store and you find these goddamn things. And Christ, were they good. And they would rip your teeth clean from your head. That you chew on that thing, that's nothing but solid caramel right there. And it was as hard as fucking cement until you started to put it in your mouth and started eating the thing. And the saliva would break it down. It would soften. And it would become chewy. But it was just chewy enough to tear back molars. You know, if we'd known about this, we could have saved our parents thousands of dollars on wisdom tooth extraction and just, you know, just pull that fucker. Anyway, I digress. So, what the hell else, man? That was it. You know, and my dad, God rest his soul, my father was huge on candy. Oh, Christ. My old man, and he bought really good, you know, you probably don't like these, but I love those Heath bars, which is that, what the fuck is a Heath? It's chocolate and some other amazingly, what is that? Peanut butter and toffee or something. He'd buy those. My father bought those by the fucking crate. And then I'd be sitting there watching TV with my dad. This would be a typical night. I used to love to sit with my father and watch the kind of shows he watched. I liked the shows that he liked. He liked Westerns. He liked war movies. He liked action movies. He liked James Bond movies. You know, dad was cool. And you sit, you watch these shows. And then there he is. It's about 9:30. My mother's doing something else. The kid, you know, he says, you want to get some chocolate? I want to get that semi-sweet. You want to get that semi-sweet? Let's go. Come on, Phil. And because I was Phil. And we get up and, where are you going? We're going out of the corner, Marge. Anybody want anything? Go to the corner and get some chocolate.
Oh, that sounds nice.
You know. And we jump in the car and my father would buy those big fucking bars of semi-sweet chocolate. Now, that sounds really gross. And I don't buy them anymore. But at the time, because you're a kid, you don't know any better. Your dad, I began to really like it. I liked the kind of, it was a tart taste to this chocolate. And it, I don't know, it sounded like I could, you know, this is authentic German chocolate or something, you know. And so we would eat these semi-sweet, my dad would get the big fucking semi-sweet chocolate bars. He used to take them with us. He had a sailboat. We used to go sailing out of Newport Beach. And he would take these semi-sweet chocolate bars as a snack or something to eat. You know, we got hungry. We always had Triscuits. That was another thing. I remember Triscuits and semi-sweet and RC Cola. Now, the other thing, don't ask me where, how, what. One of the things I will give my folks credit for is the fact that they started in with this. My mom and dad started in with diet shit long before anybody else that I knew of. And so they would purchase Diet Right soda. Now, does anybody remember this guy, this Diet Right soda? Diet Right soda was as nasty as it gets. It actually was in a big bottle about this big and a narrow neck. and a really small label, Diet Right Soda. Maybe they still make it. But I started out with diet soda, so I never really knew unless I was with my friends and we'd, you know, stop off and we'd get a real soda. You go, wow, this is some fucking sugar in this thing, man, because we don't drink this shit at my house. You know, in fact, if you had friends over to your house and your parents were kind of health food freaks, and I would say my folks were health food freaks, they were just diet freaks. There was nothing there for any kid, you know. I remember going over to friends' houses. They had all the good food. They had fucking candy. They had marshmallows. They had peanut butter. They had white bread. They had that Wonder Bread, that white. Man, I wanted to eat that shit. I'd never seen white bread. And because we had Roman meal. That was what I grew up on. Roman goddamn meal bread. Roman meal. And you have kids come over to your house and visit you. The only thing we had, which was a pretty cool thing, we had a swimming pool that my father put in right when we moved into this house. I was 7 years old. I wake up one Saturday morning and I hear this big fucking tractor going down the side of the house. And I look up and, you know, nobody tells you shit when you're seven. Who tells you anything? They make plans. They get, the next thing you know, you're on Mars. How did I get it? Well, it's something we decided to do, you know. So nobody told me anything. Of course, now, how do you build a pool and not know that it's on its way? That didn't tell me shit. I wake up and I see a tractor coming down the house. Now, you know, this must have been months in the planning, you know, weeks, months. Ain't cheap. Nobody said a goddamn thing. I don't know how that escaped me. I don't know how the news that we're putting in a swimming pool in the backyard escaped me, but it wasn't anything that my father was not the kind of guy that would clue the kids in on shit. He was one of these, you know, be seen and not heard one of these guys, you know, kind of guy. He wasn't, I wouldn't say my dad was he wasn't an abusive man or hateful. He was a very, very bipolar man. So if you want my father, you want a thumbnail sketch of my dad, look at fucking Ralph Cramden. I've said it before. Maybe that's why I have such an affinity for that character, because that was my father. You didn't know who was coming to the door at night. Was it going to be the depressed Ralph Cramden? Alice, I'm going to kill that bum down at the, you know. Or, baby, let's go out and get Chinese food. That was my dad, you know. So who's going to be? And when his car pulled in, I was just talking to my cousins about it. My cousins came to visit back in the day, and they remember being on pins and needles. They remember everybody, you know, kind of tensing up when my dad's car came in the driveway. So here comes this fucking tractor. I look out back, and the coolest thing in the whole wide world is happening if you're 7 years old and you're a kid, you know, you're a little boy. I look out, and this goddamn tractor is just pulling the fucking sod up in the dirt and everything, man. It's digging a big-ass hole, you know. I'm like, this is the greatest thing that's happened in my young life. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm seven. I don't know how good it can get. This is pretty fucking cool. And so I'm watching this, you know. And I went outside, and I remember I was, you know, like you do as a kid. You're hanging around, you're looking at the guys, you're watching the thing, and the guy every now and again says, "Now watch out, son, you know, you may fall in the hole, and then we'll have to bury you in there." Well, I understand. You know, and you're looking, and I remember I looked back, and we had a kitchen window that looked out on the back yard, and I look at it, and I just look, and there's my father, and I see a silhouette of my dad, slightly hunched, and just, whoo, you know. And I think I've told this story a number of times, but it's always a very humorous one. I asked him later, I said, "Dad, I know you were drinking, and when you're a kid again, you think that's just adult shit. Oh, it's the adults are doing that. They're drinking that shit. I don't know why they're drinking. You know, that's the stuff they drink." I asked him, "What are we doing?" He says, "I was wondering how I was going to pay for it." And my father was doing my dad had a panic attack of some kind, wondering how he was going to pay for the swimming pool. The silhouette of this guy just, you know, you know, he drank that, my old man was not very effete when it came to he was a fairly pedestrian booze drinker. He was not a beer drinker. No beer. There were never any beer in our house. Never a fucking beer. And he may have had a prejudice against beer. I think my father looked upon beer drinkers as bums. God knows he was around a lot of beer drinkers, and I was just talking to Franny and Elaine about my mother's side of the family. Oh, they love to pack that shit away. They love to pack that shit away. My grandmother played a piano, and was a musician, and apparently was not so much a drinker as she was just somebody who liked to go down to the corner bar and play songs. Apparently she had one of those ears for a melody, so people could say, play this song, and she'd break right into it. Well, she met another musician on one of these evening sojourns, and that was my grandfather, who I never got to know and who was kicked out of the lives of my mother and my aunt because he was just my step-grandfather, who came into the picture after my grandmother died, was a cop. He was a Toronto police officer. And you can well imagine in the 20s and back in those days, that if you were a cop, especially a detective, and you probably wielded a lot of power. You could probably tell a guy, you get your fucking ass out of here. Never mind the man had a legal right to see his daughters. Never mind nobody can tell you to get out of the lives of your children. I mean, this has to be a court order, you know? That kind of shit doesn't wash anymore, you know? That kind of bullshit doesn't wash anymore. Back then, you know, it stood. You know, here's a guy... Probably, and I asked Fran and Elena, I said, do you think this guy drank? They said, we don't think he was an alcoholic. I thought he was an alcoholic. I said, we don't think he was an alcoholic. But yeah, they partied, you know. This is my grandfather, my mother's side. My grandfather, my father's side, I have no fucking idea who he was. I have no idea because my father was given up for adoption. He was a bastard. He was out of wedlock, huh? But on my mother's side, it was this guy. Now, Frank Crow was the grandfather I grew up with. Grandpa Crow, we used to call him. Frank Crow was this guy. He was a cop in Toronto, Canada. And the legend has it that when my grandmother died of rheumatic fever, my mother was 9 years old. My aunt, Gladdy, was probably about 6 or 7. Actually, backtrack. Frank came into this world, he came into the lives of my mother and my aunt and my grandmother, I believe, because he just promised her a better life. I think that my grandfather might have been smacking my grandmother around something. But anyway, Frank popped in. Maybe it was a good thing that he told this guy to get lost. I don't know what it was, but he basically said, get the fuck out of here and never come back. That's the last I ever heard about my grandfather being involved in the lives of my mother and my aunt. Now, I've got pictures of him. I've got a really good picture of him and my grandmother at Lake Ontario in Toronto, which I will bust out one of these days, guys, because I got a whole fucking bag of pictures that Elaine gave me. But this guy was told basically get lost. Now, today, that shit doesn't fucking play. You know, you want me out of the lives of my own daughters? You better get a fucking court order, motherfucker. These are my kids. You know, this is what we do. And tell me that isn't a, you know, tell me the world hasn't improved. You know, I mean, at least that much, where you can't just pull this kind of shit, you know? I mean, Grandpa Crow was a great guy. I loved him. He was kind and gentle and sweet to myself, my sisters, and my brother. My mother loved him. My dad liked him. He even hired my dad, gave my dad a job, you know. But, you know, these are the stories you hear after they pass on and you suddenly get the full measure of a guy. You realize, well, this guy wasn't all that. And my grandfather, it is said, was not that nice of a guy when it came to the people he arrested. And the way the Toronto police treated, you know, suspects in those days was pretty much the way all cops treated suspects back in the 30s and 20s and so on. You got the shit kicked out of you, man. If you gave them any fucking lip, they would beat your ass. There's a TV show that you should watch. It, in my opinion, was superior to The Untouchables. It was produced by NBC in the late 50s and early 60s. It was on for maybe 2-3 seasons. It was a 30-minute, which was probably not long enough. Back then, they actually tackled dramas in 30 minutes. And it starred a great old actor, I think has since passed on, named James Gregory, who was a terrific actor. And he was a hard bit. James Gregory was from New York, you know, and he had that puss on him, you know, and he had that New York accent. And it was the true memoirs of a New York police detective named Barney Roditsky. Anyway, this show was probably more accurate as to police in the 20s than The Untouchables was to police in the 30s. The Untouchables was complete fabrication. It was total bullshit. I mean, it was based on Elliot Ness, but they went to some crazy places. But with the Lawless Years was pretty good because it showed this police detective in New York, and they had no problem showing these guys pulling out these fucking truncheons, pulling out these leather straps, smacking their hands, smacking the hanging lamp. Okay, you know what we're going to do here, Eddie? You don't tell us. Now, come on, huh? You know what's going to happen? Bam, they're hitting the fucking table to shit. I mean, they came right out and showed this, you know, that this is how the cops did it back then. Yeah, we got a constitution. We got the same constitution today that we had back then. What's the fucking difference? People started to enforce it, you know. People started to, well, geez, you know, maybe I can do the, yeah, that's why it's fucking there, man. Yeah, you can use it. But there isn't some constitution angel that flies down from heaven and says, now, wait a minute, the constitution says, you know, the motherfucking document is there. It's enforced or it's not. And what we try to do, and this is what we talk about, the ideal, you know. The ideal is to enforce this and to make it apply to everyone and to create the country. When people talk about the old days, folks, more often than not, they're talking about that shit. There's some people that like that shit. They like the idea that cops could beat you up in a fucking interrogation room. They like the idea that fucking the taxpayer or whoever society was not necessarily responsible for somebody dying of some disease on a side. They like that. Those are the good old days. Now, they may be talking about the morality that people have, but I ask you, what kind of morality is there when you have in back alleys and back rooms cops beating people up like that? So, fuck it. All right, we got to get our shit together here, man. We got 3 minutes to go. I want to check something out here, man.
What it say?
What you say?
Next to it.
What you say? What you say? Huh?
Next to it. And it say, money ain't shit when it's wealth next to it. Wealth ain't shit when it's health next to it. And
Lupe Fiasco, I think that kid's good. Like him. Like him a lot. All right. We are ready to go, man. I can't think of anything else that we can do, any other way that we can fuck this up more than we already have. What I will do is get the... we're going to have Bobby Dooley on today. We haven't had Bobby on in a long time, and Bobby's freaking out because Margaret almost has as many likes as her now on Facebook. But Bobby... We got a whole fucking thing that we're planning for you, baby. Don't you be fucking freaking out because Margaret this, Margaret that. And Bobby had a very small part in our one-man show. You have, Bobby, you got the fucking world, possibly, at your fingertips. So, and that's all we're going to say about that. So don't be bitching and pissing and moaning, girlfriend, because, you know, there's a lot of shit that's going to come down. All right. Good morning and welcome to our Listen Live and our Tune-In listeners. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I just got done with my pre-show with my good friends, my backstage pass holders, of the subscribers to our website. And if you want to be a part of our BSP family, and we have these chats every morning, generally I'm talking about God knows what, you know, horse shit. Then by all means, get a backstage pass. You have access to an enormous archive. We are working on... Everybody asks us about an app. Okay, let me tell you, because you got to know something about it. Before you start saying, Phil, why don't you get an app? You got to know something about apps. You don't have to know something about apps. You have to trust that I know something about apps. And we'll explain that in just a moment. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. So, again, our backstage pass available to you at our website. And, tickets for our one-man show available at the Hollywood Improv website. We have links to that on Facebook, links to that on our homepage. July 30th, the big show. Check it out.